in here with us tonight. Everybody remember that we got a big group of folks at Happy Hollow this week. Travis and Jason are leading the session, and then we have some of our people who are helping as counselors and in other ways, and some of our kids are out there as well, especially tonight. We have several people with them. There are several activities coming up this week. Our folks are going to be helping the first responders from the accident the other day are having a get-together to a kind of a processing, a grief processing time tomorrow. They're going to do it here at our building. And Steve Martin from the Union Hill Church is the chaplain for that group, and he will... our folks are going to be providing for them. Thank you for that. On Wednesday evening, our summer series continues, and our speaker this week is Jason Hart, who is the youth minister for the Northside Church in Harrison. Jason's been with us before, but it's been 3 years or so ago. We enjoy him, and we look forward to that. And since we have some of our young people at camp, makes it more important for the rest of us to be here for this activity. We have, in our physical bodies, I'm discovering more and more, we have various kinds of attacks. You can maybe develop your own list. I'm not going to share with you mine. You'll be glad for that. You know what that's like. That means that your well-being is challenged by some sort of a condition which is not the normal for you, or at least hopefully not the normal. And therefore you notice it and you feel it, and you try to address it and get better from it. It should not be then any surprise that where our spiritual lives are concerned, in our faith lives, we also experience attacks. For one thing, our old enemy makes sure that that happens. For another thing, our being human and life being what it is makes it certain that we experience certain kinds of attacks to our faith. One of them is what I would call a why attack. A why attack causes us, in spite of the song we sang a few minutes ago, to murmur and complain. But the kind of why attack I'm talking about is experienced mostly by the most faithful, the strongest of God's servants. And it takes the form not merely of depression or of self-absorption, but of a lament in which the heart is opened up to God and His help is sought in working through that why attack. Jeremiah is an example. Jeremiah experienced why attacks in three famous passages in the book of Jeremiah. Here's a man who engages in a faithful ministry to God for a period of 35 or 40 years, and he does it at a difficult time in the history of his people, mostly a difficult time. And he is assigned a message that the people did not especially want to hear or enjoy, and he gained very few people who agreed with him or listened to him or supported what he had to say. And in between chapter 11 and verse 20 of his book, and then chapter 20 and verse 12, there are the statements of what happens to him, because he says, "For to you I have committed my cause." He says that to God. In chapter 11, he's like a gentle lamb who is led into this work thinking that God will be with him and it'll go okay, and finding out that when his critics said, "Let's chop down the tree," they're talking about him. And he becomes the object of disapproval because he has been faithful in doing what God gives him to do. And then as the story comes along in his book, you begin to see more glimpses of his heart and how he feels about it when he has things happen to him because of his service to God and in his service to God. So here are Jeremiah's experience of the why attack. First off, and I'll mention to you, I want to start with the last of these and work my way back to the passage where I want for us to spend most of our time. Jeremiah's voice of his why attack happens in chapter 20 and verse 18. Chapter 20 of Jeremiah is sometimes known as the Jeremiah's Garden of Gethsemane. It's the time when he describes, it's the time when he says to God in verse 7, "You've deceived me, and I was deceived. I went out to do what you gave me to do. I couldn't contain it because I had this burning fire in my bones. I couldn't say, I'm just not going to speak anymore." And he goes ahead to describe what happens to him, how he ends up being a dread warrior to his people. And when you get down to verse 14, he begins to say, "Cursed be the day on which I was born." And then he gets to verse 18, and here's the why statement. "Why did I come out from the womb to see toil and sorrow and to spend my days in shame?" It's interesting that those are the words from that song, "Man of Sorrows." He experienced toil, he saw toil and sorrow and spent his days in shame. If anyone ever was feeling like a failure, or if anyone was ever feeling like he had not accomplished anything, or feeling like it had not been worth it, it almost seems like Jeremiah was in this case, doesn't it? Why was I ever born? What good have I done? What has my service ever really amounted to? Why was I sent to do this? And remember, these are not the words of someone just wallowing in self-pity. This is a man who had committed himself to God's cause. Back up a little bit to chapter 15 of Jeremiah. Notice the second of these why attack statements. In this case, Jeremiah says in verse 15, "Lord, you know," and he's talking about his persecutors and his desire that God visit them and judge them. He says, "Your words were found and I ate them. They became to me a joy and the delight of my heart. I'm called by your name. I didn't sit in the company of the revilers. I sat alone," he says in verse 17. And now we come to verse 18 of Jeremiah 15. "Why is my pain unceasing, my wound incurable, refusing to be healed?" And he's not talking about his physical pain. He's talking about his heartbreak over what's happening to his people and his disappointment in the way they've responded to his message and his puzzlement over why God has not come to his aid and to aid of his people more. "Will you be to me like a deceitful brook, like waters that fail?" Remember some of the old cowboy movies or stories, some of the old Western books I read, these guys will get to where they have not had, their canteen has run dry and it's been cast aside. They remember somewhere where there's a branch that's fed by a spring, and if they can just make it across the dry desert to get there, they'll be okay. And they get there and it too is all dried up. That's how Jeremiah feels in this situation where his faith is concerned. Why is my pain unceasing? And then back up to chapter 12, which is really the first of these why statements in this book, but the third one that we'll look at here. Jeremiah 12, it's verse 1. In some ways, this is why I've saved it. In some ways, this is the most painful of these attacks. The most threatening, the most dangerous, and heart-rending for one of God's servants. If you back up to verse 18 and following of chapter 11, you see how his attitude has been toward God. Verse 20 ends, "To you I have committed my cause." And then you come to chapter 12 and verse 1. "Righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you, yet I would plead my cause before you. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? You plant them and they take root and they grow and they produce fruit. You're near in their mouth and far from their heart." And he points out here how he feels like God's dealing with the opposite of that with him, and he wants to know how long this is going to go on. That's a why attack. If I cannot feel as a servant of God, if I cannot know that my life is doing some good, and if I feel like the heartbreak and the hurt is unceasing in my life, that's one thing, but why does the person who simply forgets God and engages in evil and wickedness seem to be living it up and having a wonderful time in the practice of his ungodliness? That challenge to faith is the thing that makes the world seem attractive to people, and particularly sometimes our younger ones. So Jeremiah experienced a why attack. That's not new. The question is, what does God say to him? How is it that this man responds to those kinds of attacks and keeps on doing his work over such a long period of time so faithfully? There are not a great many statements of the wonderful hope of the future in Jeremiah that you'll find in Isaiah, for example. This man doesn't get to do a lot of talking about that. How's his faith sustained in the presence of this kind of thing? So I want to take you to chapter 12 again with me, and I want to summarize, if I can, in my own words, what God says to Jeremiah, especially in the face of this third why attack. Here's what God said. Number one, Jeremiah, you must let this be training, this experience, this attack be training to increase your endurance for what you're still going to meet, what you're yet to meet in the future in your life. Your first thought is, well, that's not what you say to a hurting guy. But it is in some ways where you say, now wait, let's not just think of this one moment. Let's back up and take the longer view and consider where this is going to take us in the longer term. And in the longer term, if you can see that what you're experiencing now as a way of preparing you and strengthening you for what comes later on, then you benefit from it. This is verse 5 and 6. God says to him after his complaint, "If you've raced with men on foot and they've wearied you, how will you compete with the horses?" Let me stop here for a moment. And lying in the background of this is already in Jeremiah, he's been talking about the Babylonians who are coming. He says, their horses are snorting in Dan. That means up in the north where they're coming. That's the horses he's talking about. And if you're going to grow weary because you look around and you see some of the wicked and you think they are prospering, if your faith cannot handle that, then what will happen when the Babylonians wade in here and carry the people all off and tear the walls of the city down? If in a safe land you're so trusting, what will you do in the thicket of the Jordan? The thicket of the Jordan is the wilderness area where the animals and the thorns and so forth tore at people who tried to make their way through. Well, there are all kinds of dangers. And that's God's answer. The New Testament uses this line of thought in at least two places, maybe more than that. One of them is in Romans 5 in verses 3 and 4 along in there, where it talks about what you, when you find yourself in trial and you handle that with patience, then your endurance grows, and when you do that, then your hope increases. In Hebrews 12, it makes the point that, the writer makes the point that God disciplines those whom he loves. The word discipline to us means punishes, but it also means trains. He develops. And the idea is that God lets his servants go through things that are not pleasant at the moment, so that in the longer term, they can be partakers of his holiness. In other words, for spiritual growth and development. 1 Peter chapter 1 uses a similar line of thought, and you've read passages like that before. The thing is, apparently, we are susceptible to thinking that God only does that with other people, other servants of his, and not ourselves. And it's a shock sometimes to find out there's not another way to develop the faith, the strong, the faith that will not shrink, than letting people face some things from which they'd like to shrink. What if some of our young people who are going to participate in high school sports this fall could just show up and be great at it without ever having to do any training in the meantime, or any off-season or summertime or fall practice or anything like that? What if you could run cross-country and never, or do marching band and never have to put any time in learning a step at a time how to do that? You know that won't work. Why do we think it will work with faith? Secondly, God says, and I think this is a strong and an interesting point, God says to Jeremiah, look, I'm involved in this too. If you're hurting, if your heart is hurting over what's happening, how do you think it makes me feel? If you're wondering why the wicked are prospering and why your people are struggling, my people are struggling, if you're having a hard time with that, you don't love them more than I do, and you don't care about justice more than I do, how do you think it makes me feel? It's hard to stop and remember that God is a great Father capable of loving to the point of sacrificing. And if he cares that much, how much must it wound him when his love is sinned against? Here in Jeremiah 12, at verses 7 and 8, you notice, God says to Jeremiah, I have forsaken my house. I have abandoned my heritage. I've given the beloved of my soul into the hands of her enemies. My heritage has become to me like a lion in the forest. She's lifted up her voice against me. Therefore, I hate her. If you read that and you think about God's anger, you may miss the point. What he's talking about is his betrayed love and his heartbreak over it. And he's simply asking Jeremiah, look, I haven't forgotten, and this is not something that I just overlook. It's not easy for me. Back over in chapter 9 of Jeremiah, There's a longer section that describes how God feels about having to leave his people and to go away from them. In verses 2 and following in chapter 9, he lists their sins. They're all adulterers. They're a company of treacherous men. They bend their tongue like a bow. Falsehood and not truth has grown strong in the land. They proceed from evil to evil. They don't know me, declares the Lord. Let everyone beware of his neighbor, put no trust in a brother. Every brother is the deceiver, and every neighbor goes about as a slanderer. Everyone deceives his neighbor, no one speaks the truth. They've taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves committing iniquity, heaping oppression upon oppression and deceit upon deceit. They refuse to know me, declares the Lord. Therefore, says the Lord of hosts, behold, I will refine them and test them, for what else can I do because of my people? Those are the words of a God who has tried everything. They're not words free of emotion. And that's something that we should not overlook when we are dealing with our own challenges. Number three, I think when I read this, I hear God saying to Jeremiah in his lament or complaint, why do the wicked prosper? I think God says to him, you and I both know that not all the wicked are prospering, and that none of the wicked always do or do forever. You know how we get the times in our thinking where we compare ourselves to those who seem to be doing so much better. That's the way of the advertisement in our culture, which pictures everything. I've been struck in recent years how the change that's taken place in the way people who used various kinds of tobacco products are portrayed. I'm not attacking anybody over anything right now. I'm just saying, you know, it hadn't been that many years ago when there was the Marlboro Man. And it looked like if you had strength and vitality, and if you were someone who really knew what life was all about, this is what you did. Now they're showing people whose voice boxes have been lost and whose faces are disfigured because of some kind of disease or cancer that they've dealt with. Jeremiah got to thinking, all the wicked are over here prospering and wealthy and happy, and he wasn't seeing the ones over here whose families were breaking apart and whose inner life was in turmoil and who were hopeless in the face of disease and loss, and who were insecure, and who hated. He wasn't seeing that. Let's not let our enemy switch the advertising on us so that we get confused and thinking that the ones who ignore God do well and the ones who serve Him do poorly. No, that's not always the case. And that's what God says to Jeremiah. Verses 9 through 13. Is not my heritage to me like a hyena's lair and the birds of prey against her all around? You're talking, Jeremiah, you're talking about the wicked prospering when they're surrounded by predators. Go assemble the wild beasts and bring them to devour. Many shepherds have destroyed my vineyard. They've trampled down my portion. They've made my pleasant portion a desolate wilderness. They've made it a desolation, desolate. It mourns me. The whole land is made desolate. But no man lays it to heart. So, Jeremiah, what are you talking about? The wicked prospers. Doesn't look like that, does it, if you really stop and give it another thought? And let me take the fourth statement from a different chapter here, but the similar context. In chapter 15, God finally says to Jeremiah, look, I'm with you. Whether it feels to you like that right now, and whether it looks like that to you right now, I'm with you. In chapter 15, in verses 19 and following, thus says the Lord, and then you get to verse 20, the end of the verse. It talks about, I'm gonna make you to this people a fortified wall of bronze. They may fight you, but they won't prevail. For I am with you to save you and deliver you, says the Lord. I'll deliver you out of the hand of the wicked. I'll redeem you from the grasp of the ruthless. That's what God says. Now, it's interesting that in the New Testament, after God has talked about why he disciplines his children in Hebrews 12, he says to them, I'm with you. I won't fail you or forsake you. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6. That's the same sort of progression of thought as you find here. And I have an idea that the same progression of thought happens with God with all of his servants. I think you can see it in some of the Psalms, which are classified as laments. God listens to the complaint. He offers the chance to grow through it. He lets people know that he feels it too. He still recognizes what sin does to the lives of people and is doing to the lives of people. And he says to his servants, remember that I am with you no matter what. And I'll redeem you from the grasp of the ruthless. When you have a why attack, remember those four things that God says to Jeremiah here. I believe it'll be helpful to me or to you. In that way. Maybe you're here tonight and your faith is waiting for the opportunity to be expressed. Maybe you need to make the good confession and to be baptized into Christ. Maybe you have succumbed to some sort of a why attack, though in that case, usually people are not with us on Sunday evening. But if you're here and that's happened, you're not the first. It can be prayed over. It's a privilege in family life to pray for each other like that. So if we can help you, please let us know about that while we stand and sing this song together.